Eleanor awoke next morning in his small but pleasant room. It was done in green and white with monograms on the toilet set. He had a tiny white bed with a green quilt and a picture of the Nativity and one of Windsor Castle on the walls. The sun was shining over all these things as Mr. Saltina opened his sleepy eyes. Just then there was a rat-tat on the door. "Come in," called Mr. Saltina, and in came Edward Pecurio balancing a tray very cleverly. He smiled in a mysterious and superior way as he placed the tray on Mr. Saltina's pointed knees. "Your early beverage," he announced, and began to pull up the blind, still smiling to himself. "Oh, thank you," cried Mr. Saltina, feeling very tousled compared to this grand fellow. Then, to his great surprise, Pecurio began to open the wardrobe and to look at Mr. Saltina's suits. Mr. Saltina dared not say a word, so he swallowed his tea and ate a Mari biscuit hastily. Presently, Pecurio advanced to the bed with a bright blue serge suit. "Will you wear this today, sir?" he asked quietly. "Oh, certainly," said Mr. Saltina. "And a clean shirt would not come amiss," said Pecurio. "What about this pale blue and white stripe?" "With pleasure," replied Mr. Saltina. So Pecurio laid them out in neat array, also a razor and brush for shaving. Then he opened a door, saying, "This is the bathroom. Shall I turn on hot or cold?" "Well, I will try cold," said Mr. Saltina, feeling it was more manly to say that. Pecurio bowed and beat a retreat to the bathroom. Then he returned and told Mr. Saltina that when he was washed he would find his breakfast in the sitting room. When Mr. Saltina was dressed in his best blue suit and clean shirt, he strolled into the sitting room where a gay canary was singing fit to burst in the window and a couple of doves cooing in a wicker cage. A cheery smell greeted him as Pecurio glided in with some steaming coffee. Mr. Saltina felt more at home and passed a few remarks about the weather. Pecurio smiled and uncovered some lovely kidneys on toast, and as he did so, bent and whispered in Mr. Saltina's ear, "You could have come in your dressing gown." Mr. Saltina gave a start. "Oh, can I?" he said. 10,000 thanks." Then Pecurio said with a bow, "His lordship is going to a levee this morning and thinks it might amuse you to go too. Could you be ready by 11 o'clock?" "Oh, yes, what fun," said Mr. Saltina. "Have you any notion what a levee is, my man?" Pecurio gave a superior smile. "It is a party given by the Queen to very superior people. But this one is given by the Prince of Wales, as the Queen is not quite her usual self today. It will be at Buckingham Palace, so you will drive with his lordship." Mr. Saltina was fearfully excited. "What shall I wear?" he gasped. "Well, of course, you ought to have black satin knickerbockers and a hat with white feathers, also garters and a star or two." "You surprise me," said Mr. Saltina. "I have none of those articles." "Well," said Pecurio kindly, "his lordship will lend you his second-best cocked hat, as you are obliged to wear one, and I think with a little thought I might rig you up so as to pass muster." Then they rummaged among Mr. Saltina's things, and Pecurio got very intelligent and advised Mr. Saltina to wear his best black evening suit and roll up his trousers. He also lent him a pair of white silk stockings, which he fastened tightly round his knees with red rosettes. Then he quickly cut out a star in silver paper and pinned it to his chest, and also added a strip of red ribbon across his shirt front. Then Mr. Saltina surveyed himself in the glass. "Is it a fancy dress party?" he asked. "No, they always wear that kind of thing, but wait till you see his lordship. If you are ready, sir, I will conduct you in." Mr. Saltina followed Pecurio up countless stairs till they came to the Earl's compartments and tapped on the bedroom door. "Come in," cried a merry voice, and in they strode. "I have done my best with Mr. Saltina, my lord. I trust he will do. The hat, of course, will make a deal of difference." Mr. Saltina bowed nervously, wishing he had got correct knickerbockers, as his trousers did not feel too firm in spite of the garters. "Not half bad," cried the Earl. "Try on the hat, Saltina. It is on my bed." Mr. Saltina placed it on his head, and the feathers and gold braid became him very well. But he felt very jealous of the Earl, who looked a sight for the gods. He had proper satin knickerbockers with diamond clasps and buckled shoes and black silk stockings which showed up his long, fine legs. He had a floppy shirt of softest muslin with real lace collar and cuffs. A sword hung at his side, and a crimson sash was round his waist, and a splendid cocked hat on his head. His blue eyes twinkled as he pulled on a pair of white kid gloves. "Well, come on, Saltina," he cried, "and don't be nervous. I will get you a pair of knickers tomorrow. Will you get a hansom, Pecorio?" Presently, the Earl and Mr. Saltina were clattering away to Buckingham Palace. "You won't mind if I introduce you as Lord Hyssops, do you?" said the Earl as he lit his pipe. "You see, you are sort of mixed up with the family, so it won't matter, and we'll look better." "So it would," said Mr. Saltina. "What do we do at the levee?" "Oh, we stroll round and eat ices and champagne and that kind of thing. Sometimes there's a little music." "Is there any dancing?" asked Mr. Saltina. "Well, not always," said the Earl. "I'm glad of that," said Mr. Saltina. "I am not so nimble as I was, and my garters are a trifle tight." Just then the splendid edifice appeared in view, and Mr. Saltina licked his dry lips at sight of the vast crowd. All round were carriages full of costly people, and outside the railings stood tall lifeguards keeping off the mere people who had gathered to watch the nobility clatter up. Lord Clincham began to bow right and left, raising his cocked hat to his friends. There was a lot of laughter and friendly words as the cab finally drew up at the front door. Two tall lifeguards whisked open the doors, and one of them kindly tipped the cabman. Mr. Saltina followed his lordship up the grand steps, trying to feel as homely as he could. Then a splendid-looking fellow in a red tunic and a sort of black velvet tam-o'-shanter stepped forward from the throng, shouting, "What name, please?" "The Earl of Clincham and Lord Hyssops," calmly replied the Earl, gently nudging Mr. Saltina to act up. Mr. Saltina nodded and blinked at the menial as much as to say, "All is well," and then he and the Earl hung up their cocked hats on two pegs. "This way," cried a deep voice, and another menial appeared. They followed this fellow down countless corridors and finally came to big folding doors. The Earl twiddled his moustache and slapped his leg with his white glove as calmly as could be. Mr. Saltina perspired rather hard and gave a hitch to his garters to make sure. Then the portals divided and their names were shouted in chorus by countless domestics. The sumptuous room was packed with men of a noble nature, dressed like the Earl in satin knickerbockers, etc., and with ladies of every hue, with long trains and jewels by the dozen, you could hardly move in the gay throng. Dukes were as naught, as there were a good lot of princes and archdukes, as it was a very superior levee indeed. The Earl and Mr. Saltina struggled through the crowd till they came to a platform draped with white velvet. Here, on a golden chair, was seated the Prince of Wales in a lovely ermine cloak and a small but costly crown. He was chatting quite genially with some of the crowd. Up clambered the Earl, followed at top speed by Mr. Saltina. "Hello, Clincham," cried the Prince, "quite homely and not at all grand. So glad you turned up. Quite a squash, eh?" "A bit overpowering, Your Highness," said the Earl, who was quite used to all this. "May I introduce my friend Lord Hyssops? He is staying with me, so I thought I'd bring him along, if you don't mind, Prince." "Not at all," cried the genial Prince, looking rather surprised. Mr. Saltina bowed so low he nearly fell off the platform. The Prince smiled kindly. "I am pleased to see you, Lord Hyssops," he said in a regal voice. Presently His Highness rose. "I think I will have a quiet glass of champagne," he said. "You'll come too, Clincham, and bring your friend. The diplomats are arriving, and I am not much in the mood for deep talk. I have already signed a dozen documents, so I have done my duty." They all went out by a private door and found themselves in a smaller but gorgeous room. The Prince tapped on the table, and instantly two menials in red tunics appeared. "Bring three glasses of champagne," commanded the Prince. "And some ices," he added majestically. "One grows weary of court life," he remarked. "Ah, yes," agreed the Earl. "It upsets me," said the Prince, lapping up his strawberry ice. "All I want is peace and quiet and a little fun. And here I am tied down to this life," he said, taking off his crown. "Being royal has many painful drawbacks." "True," mused the Earl. Silence fell, and the strains of the band could be heard from the next room. Suddenly the Prince gazed at Mr. Saltina. "Who did you say you were?" he asked in a puzzled tone. "Lord Hyssops," responded our hero, growing purple at the lie. "Well, "You are not a bit like the Lord Hyssop's I know," replied the prince. "Could you explain matters?" "He's quite all right, really, prince," said the earl. "His mother was called Miss Hyssops of the Glen." "Indeed," said his royal highness, "that sounds correct. But who was your father, eh?" Then Mr. Saltina thought he would not tell a lie, so in trembly tones he muttered, "My poor father was but a butcher, your highness, a very honest one, I may add, and passing rich. He was called Dominic Saltina, and my name is Alfred Saltina." The prince stroked his yellow beard, and rather admired Mr. Saltina for his truthful utterance. "Oh, I see," he said. "Well, why did you palm off on my menials as Lord Hyssop's, eh?" Mr. Saltina wiped his sweating brow, but the earl came to his rescue nobly. "My fault entirely, prince," he chimed in. "As I was bringing him to this superior levy, I thought it would be better to say he was of noble birth. Have I offended your royal dignity?" "Not much," said the prince. "It was a laudable notion, and perhaps I will ask Mr. Saltina to one of my big balls some day." "Oh, your highness," gasped our hero, falling on one knee, "that would indeed be a treat." "I suppose, prince, you have not got a job going at this palace for my friend?" asked the earl. "You see, I am rubbing him up in society ways, and he fancies court life as a profession. I suggested if there was a vacancy going, he might try cantering after the royal barouche." "So he might," said the prince. "I will speak to the prime minister about it and let you know."
10,000 thanks, cried Mr. Saltina, bowing low.
"Well, now I must get back to the levee," announced the prince, putting on his crown. So saying, they issued back to the big room, where the nobility were whirling gaily, and the more serious people, such as the prime minister and the admirals, etc., were eating ices and talking passionately about the laws in a low undertone. The earl was soon mingling gaily in a set of lancers, but Mr. Saltina dare not because of his trousers. However, he sat on a velvet chair and quite enjoyed overhearing the intelligent conversation of the Prime Minister. And now we will leave our hero enjoying his glimpse of high life and return to Ethel Montague.